Here today, we are going to chase the same theme that we started in our morning Bible studies. For most of us, we were around Genesis 22, and we were looking there at the story of Abraham taking his son Isaac up to Mount Moriah to offer him as a sacrifice. And you'll remember that story and lots of application there today. But the general principle that we're looking at is that we can trust God in all things. And we saw that there in Abraham. Abraham knew a promise of God. Abraham had never experienced resurrection, and yet he trusted that if we go up, who's coming down? We coming down also, all right? Two going up, two coming back. And so we'd see there he had this great confidence that he could trust God's plan, irregardless of maybe what God was asking of him. So when you think of the word trust, so if you guys are taking notes today, you might write that down, trust, T-R-U-S-T. What do you think of? What's that word mean? If you say, I trust somebody, or I trust something, what are you saying? You're open to it, all right? You have faith in it. They'll do what they say they're going to do. Good. Somebody else? When you're saying to somebody, I trust you, or somebody says that to you, what's it mean? All right, you're dependable. You can depend on them. I believe in you. All right? Yes. It means you can trust in God. All right? God kind of is the definition of trust, right? I mean, if we had a biblical dictionary here this morning, if you had the word trust, it could be defined as God because he's entirely trustworthy. You're absolutely right. All right? So all sorts of ways we think of it when it comes to mind, and all those are really accurate as well, but the bottom line is it's just about us placing our faith or our confidence in something or somebody. And so that word confidence is key, right? We will never put trust in something or someone that we don't have confidence in. And so let's talk through that here for just a few minutes. Don't want to get you too riled up here this morning, but we may head a direction there that has potential to do so. So starting this week, this coming week, in a state that is located to the west of us, there are going to be people just like you and I, and they're going to come to a little voting booth, and what are they going to do? They're going to cast a vote for who they think the nominee for president should be, okay? And so they're thinking through, hopefully, what these people have said, what their track record is. They're trying to be enlightened, somewhat intelligent on at least who these people are and what their background is. And so they're going to go, and they're going to cast a vote. And they're going to do so trusting that the person they're voting for is going to live out or uphold what they've promised to do, right? Now, where this gets a little bit hairy is when we start talking about politicians, that almost seems like an oxymoron, right? I promise I'll do this, and then you're in it for whatever, 3 or 4 years, 7 or 8 years, and it's like they don't equal out. You said this, and now you're this way, right? And so they're going to cast a vote, and I'm not asking you where you're going to cast your vote, or at least where you think you may cast your vote at this point, but they're going to vote for who they think is somebody that is trustworthy, somebody who has said something that sounds good, and somebody who has a track record of keeping their word. So is it hard for you to rely on somebody else other than yourself? Yeah, sometimes at that level it's hard. Sometimes we don't even trust ourselves very well. Right? Well, I was reading a story this week about a competition, and I thought it'd be a fun field trip that we could take as a church. So you let me know if you want to go after church. We can make this happen. There's a competition between people, and they go down a ski slope. Did I lose you? Okay. They go down a ski slope, and they are blind. They're blind. They can't see. And so people who have no ability to see are in a competition where they get at the top of a mountain that's covered in ice and snow, and they take off just flying down that hill. Does that sound like wisdom? Yeah. I mean, I've been down some ski slopes, and with your eyes open, it's a huge adrenaline rush. I mean, you get to the bottom, your heart's just pumping. You know, the wind's been blowing across your head or for hair for you if you got it. And it's awesome. But I couldn't imagine going down a hill not being able to see. I mean, that almost just blows my mind. The way they do it, they have a friend, a partner that goes down with them. And that person can see. And so the person is telling them, left, right, left, right. And they're just constantly correcting them as they go down this course. That's trust right there, isn't it? That's a good example of trust. Putting your confidence in somebody that you can't see, all right? You're hearing a voice, but you have no idea where the obstacles are. They do. And you're just trusting that they're going to navigate you safely down that hill, and you're going to get there, and you're going to have enjoyed the ride. That's blind trust, right? You know, it kind of works that way with us as Christians. We can't see God, and yet God can see everything. Okay, we just sang it. He knows every thought. He knows every tear. He knows everything about us. And so God sees how every dot in our life connects to the next dot. He sees how everything that we're currently in makes sense for what we're about to get into. And so one of the things we'll see today is that we can trust in the God who's getting ready to lead us into something because he's the same God who's going to lead us out. Right? If you get nothing else today, that's a good promise to walk out of here with. Whatever I'm currently in or whatever is just on the horizon for me, God is there and he's leading me in, whether it's good or bad, and the same God who leads me in is going to be the same God who's going to lead me out. And so today we're going to talk about a matter of trust. Really living our life as followers of Jesus is, it boils down to this little simple truth, this little principle. It is a matter of trust. Do I trust you, God, or don't I? Am I putting my hope in you, my confidence in you, or am I going to put it in what I can see? See, if I was a blind person who wouldn't trust somebody else, would I ever go down the hill? No. And sometimes we as Christians are that exact same way. God's calling us out to take a risk, to take the ride. And we say, God, I can't see the obstacles. I don't know how this is all going to be navigated. And so we just kind of stay up on the mountain. We praise him there, but we never step out and really work or demonstrate that we trust God. And we'll see that also here today. We're going to be in John chapter 6. So if you'd like to turn there, we'll come to a familiar story here. We're going to go through the first 13 verses. But for me here, this was early on, this was my quiet time this week. It just kind of reminded me of what it means for me to see God for who he is and to trust that the same God who's in the Bible is the same God who's God today. And so we're going to look into that here this morning. John 6, all right? We're going to go through the first 13 verses here together. This is a familiar story. But if you haven't heard it before, this will be brand new for you. So it's about the feeding of the 5,000. And so what we'll find in this story, what we're going to read about, Jesus is going to take some food from a young boy, and he's going to multiply it in a way where he's going to feed thousands of people. And so when we think about this story, sometimes we may think of the miracle of multiplication, right? I mean, God's math is not the way, his math doesn't work like our math, right? Our math says 1 plus 1 plus 1 equals what? What's 1 plus 1 plus 1? 3, okay? When you look at Father, Son, Holy Spirit, how many gods are there? One. The Lord is one God. And so in God's math, 1 plus 1 plus 1 equals 1. Okay? When we sit down and we've got just a little bit of lunch, if it's just you and I eating lunch today, and I've got some crackers, 4 or 5, and you've got a couple little fish, you think we could feed everybody in this room? No way. And yet in our story today, we see this boy gives his lunch to Jesus, and he performs a miracle. Like, his multiplication is huge. It's massive. And it really wasn't enough food even to feed the young boy, and yet it's going to feed thousands. And so we may think of that, the miracle of multiplication. And we may think about the young boy, and we don't really know how it came about that his lunch ended up in the hands of Jesus. I mean, what was the conversation between the disciples and the young boy? All we know is that it went from him to Jesus. But maybe he had questions, or maybe he just gave it freely, however that worked out. And we could talk about things like that. We could talk about how Jesus gave thanks and the importance of giving thanks for what God has blessed you with. right? So when you sit down to eat, I mean, my mom used to say, you know, if you don't pray before you eat, you're going to choke. And she still will. You know, we'll be there. Did anybody pray? You know, we're all gathered around for something, just kind of stuff. Did anybody pray? Like, oh, hope nobody chokes. You know, I don't find that to be biblical, but I think the purpose behind it is to remind us to give thanks, right? And so anytime we thank you for this food, and here we see Jesus has a little bit of food, and he gives thanks for it, right? So we could talk about that. But here, we're going to talk about a young guy, disciple, named Philip. Focus primarily in on the conversation between Jesus and Philip, and we'll look at how Jesus looks at things versus how Philip looks at things. Sometimes I'm probably a Philip. Sometimes maybe you're a Philip. But let's see kind of how this conversation here is going to evolve as Jesus here performs this miracle. And so here we are in John chapter 6. We're going to go verses 1 through 13. And so it begins, after these things, Jesus went over the Sea of Galilee, which is the Sea of Tiberias. Then a great multitude followed him because they saw his signs, which he performed in those who were diseased. And Jesus went up on the mountain, and there he sat with his disciples. Now, the Passover, a feast of the Jews, was near, and Jesus lifted up his eyes, and seeing a great multitude coming toward him, he said to Philip, where shall we buy bread that these may eat? But this he said to test him, for he himself knew what he would do. And so Philip answered him, Jesus, 200 denarii worth of bread is not sufficient for them. That's like half a year's wages, so that everybody could have just a bite. Verse 8, one of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, there is a lad here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 small fish, but what are they among so many? And then Jesus said, well, make the people sit down. Now there was much grass in the place, and so the men sat down in number about 5,000. And Jesus took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed them to the disciples and the disciples to those sitting down, and likewise of the fish, as much as they wanted. And so when they were filled, he said to his disciples, gather up the fragments that remain so that nothing is lost. And therefore they gathered them up and filled 12 baskets with the fragments of the 5 barley loaves which were left over by those who had eaten. And so it is today. We're going to note 3 things. If you'd like to follow along, you can write these down on your sermon notes for kids page. You can write these in your bulletin. You don't have to at all, but sometimes God speaks and you just want a little mental reminder. Hey, look that up later, or check that out, or ask this question, claim that promise. If we believe and come expecting, like we said, maybe God's got something here for you from this text today. All right, so 3 things we're going to note as it relates to trust, trusting in God. So we're going to see here initially that trusting in God comes as we are reminded of some things. As we are reminded in a world of unknowns, there is a God, and God knows all. Trust in God initially comes as we are reminded that in a world of unknowns, God knows all. Would you ever trust someone who didn't know anything? No, we wouldn't. And so here we're going to find this comfort initially in the fact that God knows everything. Trust has to start with a confidence that the person who we're putting our trust in knows what they're saying, or they understand what they're doing. So here today we're going to see a contrast between Jesus, who knows what he's doing, and Philip, who's trying to figure this thing out. And so Philip is a disciple of Jesus. He's been with Jesus for quite some time at this point, and yet he's lacking confidence in what to do with the situation. And so I don't know about you, but I find myself there sometimes. I lack confidence in how to deal with what I'm facing, What's the right response? What's the right step for me to take? Who do I need to consult? Right? Or who do we need to get on board with what it is that we're dealing with? Sometimes we lack a little bit of confidence, certainty, when it comes to what we're being faced with. And we'll see that here in the life of Philip as well. But let's look here initially at Jesus. In John chapter 6, let's go back to verses 5 and 6. And we'll see John clearly describe for us here an attribute of Jesus. Verse 5 says, when Jesus looked up and saw a great crowd coming toward him, he said to Philip, where shall we buy bread for these people to eat? He asked this only to test him, for he already had in mind what he was going to do. Okay? And so this tells us when Jesus asked the question, he already knew the answer. Right? He already knew what he was going to do. And so what we see here is one of the dominant or one of the main attributes of Jesus is that of his omniscience. It means that he knows everything. And so there are things in my life that you don't know. There are things in your life that I don't know. Thoughts you're having right now, what you did yesterday, what you hope to become, things of that nature. There may be things that I don't know that you're thinking about. And yet here with God, as far as he's concerned, he knows everything. That's one of his attributes. And this is all throughout Scripture, right? And this isn't the first time we see this, and it's not the last, but he knows everything. And so let's talk through some of these stories quickly for a minute. Matthew 17, you find Jesus being confronted about paying taxes. Why is it, Jesus, that you and your disciples don't pay the temple tax? And so Jesus didn't have any money on him, so what's he do? Does he send a disciple to the bank and say, hey, listen, you know, go get some money out so we can pay the temple tax? Now, Jesus says this, hey, go grab a fishing pole, and you're going to go down to the sea, and you're going to catch a fish. The first fish you catch, it's going to have money in its mouth. So just take the money out of the fish's mouth and go take it to the temple and pay our temple tax. Can you imagine being the disciple who did that? I mean, well, lo and behold, there it is. I mean, I would have doubted the whole way. And I fished quite a bit, and I found lots of stuff in the stomachs of fish. Other fish, soda cans, hooks, you name it. But money? I haven't found money yet. And here Jesus says, just go catch a fish, and there you'll find money. Right? How could he say that? Because he knows all things, right? He knows exactly where things are. He knows how to find them. He knows how to take care of business. That's the kind of God he is. And so that's one example. I think about Luke 22, where Jesus tells his disciples, hey, we're going to have a supper tonight. And so what I want you to, and they said, where should we go? Where are we going to have the supper? And Jesus said, hey, go into town and just tell people that the master is coming, that it's already prepared for us. They don't know it's us, all right? But just tell them the master needs this room, and he'll say, okay, and we'll let you have the room. And so sure enough, a couple disciples go in town and say, hey, we're looking for a room to hold the last supper, or hold supper. And sure enough, it's just like Jesus said. The room's prepared, and they walk right in later that evening, and they have supper together. So how could he tell his disciples to go somewhere if he didn't know already that the room was prepared? You might remember Jesus told them in a similar way, go get a donkey colt that's tied up, bring it back, I'm going to ride it into town. All right, well, where are we going to find this? Who are we going to talk to? We'll just go in there where you see it tied up, just untie it, start to take it. Somebody's going to ask you about it, say the master needs it, and they'll say, okay. And sure enough, it happens just like Jesus said. Right? So all he's demonstrating is that he knows all things. Now, recently we talked about the Samaritan woman. You remember her? There was this woman at a well, and she was coming to get water. And so Jesus talks to her about truth, about living water. And he tells her things about her past. Remember, he says, you've had 5 husbands, and the one you have right now is not your husband. All right? How does he know that? Because he's God, and he knows all things. He's omniscient. So he knows these things. He said about a young guy named Judas, you're going to betray me. Did Judas betray him? Yes. He said to Peter, a young man, you're going to deny me. Did Peter deny him? Yes. He said, I'm going to die. I'm going to be buried, and then I'm going to come back to life. And did he do it? Yeah. How does he do these things? Well, because he's God, and he knows all things as God. And so here initially, there is comfort in the omniscience of God. There's comfort knowing that God knows everything. And I think we see that here as well in our story. We read about it today in Psalm 56. David was talking about his grief, his suffering. God was not distant. God was close. Let's read that here. Psalm 56:8 says, record my misery, list my tears on your scroll. Are they not in your record? So here we have a picture of a God who's paying attention. You know, back in this time for David, they had professional mourners, right? It takes a lot to get me to cry, and so I would be broke if that was my profession. But some people would go to funerals. They were hired to cry, to moan, to wail, to shout, to make a big deal. And the bigger the shout, like it was supposed to mean this was a very important, prominent person. And so they just really paid people well to moan and cry loud. And it was said they would take their tears as they cried and they would collect them in a bottle so then they could go after the funeral to the people who they were supposedly mourning over And they could say, all right, see here, here's my tears, and they would get paid accordingly. All right? Kind of crazy, right? So with the process aside, what David is saying here is that you record all my tears, God. You've seen every one that's just wet my eye. You've seen every time where I wanted to cry. Right? You know everything that there is here about me. And so we see God not only knows the tears, but he cares about them as this all-knowing God. We talked about Peter. You know, Peter was one of these people who was bold and ignorant. And that's a bad combination. All right? So Jesus says one time to Peter, you're going to deny me. And Peter says, no, I'm not. And in essence, what Peter is saying is, you don't know everything. Have you ever said that to God? You think you know, but you don't know me. Yeah, I mean, everybody's going to, no, I won't. I'll die with you if that's what's required, but I will never deny you. If it costs me my life, so be it. And we find Peter just a few hours later with the opportunity to stand. And what's he do? He denies, just like Jesus said. And the Bible says he goes out and he weeps bitter tears because he understands what he had said and he remembers what Jesus had said. And it's this picture of brokenness. It's a picture of repentance. That he's hurt because the very thing he said he would not do, he's standing there doing. So a little bit later in John 21, you'll find Jesus and Peter having a conversation. Hey, Peter, do you love me? And what's Peter say? Yes, Lord, I love you. All right, take care of my people. Hey, Peter, do you love me? He asked him a second time. Yeah, I do love you, Lord. All right, take care of him. And a third time he says to him, Peter, do you love me? And Peter's reply is here, John 21, 17. Lord, you what? You know all things. All right? You know all things. You're asking me the question, but you know the answer already. And so here's a guy who just not too long prior, earlier, said, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know everything. And now he's looking at Jesus saying, you know all things. Right? There's some comfort in a God who is all-knowing. And so we see that here in Peter. And with Philip, it's just the idea that Philip was trying to figure out, could he trust God? Could he trust what Jesus was saying? Or was he going to just demonstrate trust and confidence in what was in his own hands? And so whether it's like David, who's suffering, God's not indifferent to your suffering. God knows. Right? We could be like Peter, where we've sinned, and we feel like there's no way we can be restored. God still knows you love him as a sinning Christian. God still knows that you're after him, even though you've given in to that temptation. He knows that about you. And here with Philip, still yet, God knows what's necessary, needful, even when we can't see beyond the current situation. And so knowing that God is all-knowing is a big comfort today. It's one way that we'll begin to demonstrate trust. You'll never trust anybody who knows nothing. All right, secondly here today, trust in God is going to come as we're tested. And as we're often tested to prove where our confidence lies. And so we said already, Jesus asked this question of Philip. Jesus already knew the answer to the question, right? So why ask? What's the purpose of asking that question? I mean, is it the same as me asking, what's your name? If I asked you that this morning, you probably wouldn't even answer. You say, well, Pastor, that's a silly question. You know my name. Why are you asking me my name? So if Jesus already knows the answer to the question, why is he asking? Why doesn't he just do it? Why doesn't he just take care of feeding the people? Because here's a chance to prove, to test Philip. He's going to build him. He's going to strengthen his faith. Philip doesn't know that, but Jesus knows full well what he's doing here. And so let's go back. Let's look at the question that Jesus asked and ultimately that he knows all things as well when he asked. Verse 6 says, Jesus is asking Philip, he's asking this only to test him, for he already has in mind what he was going to do. And so he's trying to prove Philip. This is either where your confidence lies, Philip. Is it with me, or is it with possibly the things that you can see? And so he was checking to really see, are you getting it yet? Are you getting it? You ever do that to people? Does that make? Are you getting it? You understand the words that are coming out of my mouth? You ever say things like that to people? And we do this in all sorts of ways. Well, here that Jesus is doing that. Because think about Philip. Philip was there at the first miracle performed. John records it. And it was at a wedding. All right? They're at the wedding and they run out of wine at the wedding, which is just like despicable. I mean, nobody wants that as part of their family. People think that of their family. Right? You should always have more wine than you have people. You should always have more wine than you have people who can drink it. And so they ran out. And so as part of that miracle, Philip was there when Jesus takes water, turns that into wine. And so Philip has seen that. Philip, you'll read a little bit earlier. By the way, all Gospels record this miracle, feeding the 5,000. It's the only miracle that's recorded in all four of the Gospels. In two of the Gospels, you'll find them just prior to this, Jesus sends out the 12 on a mission. And he tells them what to take on their mission, and he also tells them or gives them the ability to cast out demons, and he gives them the ability to heal diseases. So Philip has been a part of that. So you've seen Jesus perform a miracle. You've been part of the disciples who've helped cast out demons, heal people's diseases. You've been tracking with Jesus all day here with these people. And so on the feeding of the 5,000 day, Jesus has been teaching the multitude, and they've been amazed by him. Jesus has been healing people on this day, okay? And so when it comes to the question, where should we go to get food, what would be the natural response? At least so we would think. That's exactly right. Well, we've got to do something other than consider Jesus. I've seen him do water to wine. I've cast out demons. I've cured people's diseases. I've seen people here healed. I mean, feeding people just seems like a really small thing at this point. Is it just me? Can I take you to lunch or can I cure your disease? Which would you prefer? You can get lunch anywhere, right? If you're sick, you would want that. So to me, like, lunch is like a no-brainer. What do you want to do, Jesus? Feed them. When you turn water into wine, turn sand into what? Salmon. I don't care. Feed people. You've demonstrated that already, and yet we've got Philip here, and he's just struggling with this question. And really the question is, Philip, do you trust me? Do you trust me? Do you believe that I'm God? Do you think that I can resolve the very question that I'm asking of you? Or do you think I'm asking because I have no idea how to feed these thousands of people? And so for Philip, the light bulb hadn't come on yet, and we see that in verse 7, John chapter 6, verse 7, Philip answered him, "It would take more than half a year's wages to buy enough bread for each one to have a bite." See, Philip had witnessed all these miracles, and yet he was still doubting that God, or here in Jesus, had the power to take care of the need of these people, something as small as feeding them supper. And so not only does he know all things, but here we see Jesus has the power to do whatever he determines. And that's what it means when we say he's omnipotent. He's all-powerful. It doesn't mean he can do everything. It means he does everything that his will determines. And so here he's determined to take care of the need, and yet Philip is still struggling to come up with an answer. See, Philip thinks the answer lies in his hands. What's he do? Hey, let's see if we can feed all these people. And Philip's like emptying his pockets. That's kind of how I picture it here today. I mean, I guess half a year's wages we wouldn't carry around in our pockets. But whatever they had was insufficient for the need. Right? So it would be like having a group here today. How are we going to feed all these people? Hey, I've got a quarter. You know, a quarter gives everybody just a little lick of a blow pop. Right? It's just going to make you more hungry is all it's going to do. Right? It doesn't really cure anything for you. So when Philip thinks about the answer, he thinks possibly everybody gets a bite. When Jesus thinks about the answer, what does everybody get? They get full. Okay? Now Jesus can multiply however he wants. This is not a message that says give a dollar and you get 10,000 in return. But in this story here, Jesus took something very insignificant and performed something very significant, extraordinary, multiplied it exponentially in ways that we just could not, if we were there, begin to believe that he could do. And so here, Philip is struggling. He's kind of factored Jesus out of the equation. You ever been there? What are we going to do? Maybe it was family, maybe it's personal, maybe it's something you got concern about, your church or your job or a family member, friend. What are we going to do? And it's like we factor him out like we are the answer. I've got to fix this. I've got to solve this. I've got to be the solution. I've got to do more. And through me, the answer is going to come. That's exactly what Philip's doing. He's factored Jesus out. When what we need to be doing is factoring Jesus in. And we need to start there. Okay? And so it's easy to look at Philip and go, why didn't you just say to Jesus, feed him? Okay, well, let's turn the table. When you're faced with a situation you don't know how to handle, just trust Jesus. Quit trying to figure it out. Quit trying to be the answer to your own problem. Quit thinking that the answer lies in what you have in your hands and trust Jesus. Gets a little more difficult now, doesn't it? Well, I can't just trust Jesus. I've got to trust Jesus and. I've got to trust Jesus and, like Jesus doesn't have enough. Does Jesus demonstrate that here? Does he say, hey, Philip, let's take those half your wages, and we'll feed whoever we can, and then I'll supply the rest. I don't have enough power to feed everybody. You spend your money, and I'll do my part. No. Jesus, keep your money. All right? He's going to tell them, just make the people sit down. Which sounds like an odd answer, but he's about to prove something that would really revolutionize the faith, not only of Philip, but of his disciples and some of those who were following there as well that day. See, sometimes God allows tests and trials, suffering, unknowns, to come into our lives to test us, to prove where our faith is. Right, our studies this morning referenced Peter. These trials, these sufferings have come for the purpose of refining us. And you ever feel like you and God are just cruising on a really good level? I'm just trusting you, God. I'm taking you at your word. I'm loving life. You've just blessed me. I mean, life is good. And then whammo. And something happens and we just panic. We start to freak out like we don't know what to do. You know what's happened? Our faith has been proven. See, I think, oh, I trust God entirely. And then your world gets shaken a little bit. And it's like, I got to figure this out. What's the answer to this problem? I mean, I don't know what God's doing, but I've got to do something here. We start looking to be our own answer to the problem here. Sometimes God allows these things to prove where our confidence lies. For Philip, it lied in what he could see. The money in my hands, that's all I've got. And sometimes it lies that way with us. Can God do anything through a group of 30 or 40 people that matters eternally? So I heard a yes or two. I see a couple head nods. Do you trust that? Do you have confidence in that? Or are we kind of like this? I believe you're God. Show me. Like wishful thinking. No, we fully believe. We're fully persuaded. All right? So God can do what he wants, when he wants, through whoever he wants at any time that he determines. Right? We're to be faithful, but not to look at what's in our hands and just put our hope there. Look beyond what you can see. Just like that blind skier. Trust in what you know is true. And then just obey and follow. I mean, if Jesus can feed people with the food from a young boy, he can do anything that he wants. You've heard the song, often what gets taught through this section of the gospel is that little is much when God is in it. You've heard that? That's entirely true. Whether that's here, whether it's in what's in our hands, whether it's with the abilities that we have, whatever, when it's surrendered to God and his plan, all bets are off when it comes to what God can do. Trust in God comes as we remind ourselves that God is all-knowing. Trust in God comes as we're tested. So I get to prove whether or not I really take God at his word. Am I looking to him? Am I factoring him into the equation? Or am I factoring him out? And then third and last here this morning, trusting God comes as we live each day with some anticipation and expectation for God to act. Listen, where there's little expectation, where there's little confidence in somebody, we will render ourselves inactive. Where there's no confidence, we will do nothing. You know, a case in point is we could ask one of these youth to come up here today and to stand on this table behind me, face the cross, put your arms out, and just fall off the table. You guys have seen the trust fall before. Would any of you youth do that today? I see two no's. We'll put you right up here, and you're going to face that way, and you just got to fall backwards, and we're going to tell you somebody's going to catch you. Would you do it? No. I think we'll go back to our hiding place. Where there's a lack of trust, we will be inactive. You've heard the story about a young boy who was up on a high porch, and his father was standing there telling him to jump, I'll catch you, jump, I'll catch you. And the little boy was so scared, no, 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 no. And finally, okay, and so dad says jump, and the little boy jumps, and the dad backs away. The little boy just crashes to the ground, and he says, son, let that be a lesson to you, trust nobody. That's harsh. Said with a smile. That's terrible, right? To think that a father would do that. You're entrusting, investing in your child to trust nobody. Where there's no trust, we render ourselves inactive. Right? Think about it at a car lot. You ever been to buy a car from a car dealer and you're just kind of, I don't know that I trust how this deal's all going down here. You know, something doesn't quite sound right about it. If you don't trust that this person is at least working to help you out here in some way, you'll never sign your name on the dotted line. At least not with wisdom, you won't. When a young girl is dating a young man, and yet she doesn't trust him, when he comes along one of these days and says, hey, will you marry me? She's going to have some pause, right? She's going to say, let me think about that just for a little bit. Why? Because she doesn't trust him. Where there's no confidence, there will always be inactivity. Or our activity will be compelled by fear rather than faith. So let's go back to the text here. John chapter 6, verse 10 through 13 here. And let's see how this works out for Philip. Remember, Philip's still looking at his hands. This is what we've got to take care of the need. And Jesus' response to him is, hey, Philip, have the people sit down. That sounds like the right answer. How are we going to feed these people? Just have them sit down. Okay. There was plenty of grass in that place, and they sat down. About 5,000 men were there. Jesus then took the loaves, and he gave thanks, and he distributed to those who were seated as much as they wanted. And he did the same with the fish. And when they had all had enough to eat, he said to his disciples, gather the pieces that are left over. Let nothing be wasted. And then verse 13 says, so they gathered them and filled 12 baskets with the pieces of the 5 barley loaves left over by those who had eaten. See, trust means a few things here. And so Jesus is really trying to strengthen the faith of Philip, and he's left a principle here for you and I to abide by today. The first thing about trust is this. To really trust Jesus means I'll take whatever I have in my hands and place it in yours. I'll trust that whatever you've allowed to be a blessing in my life, I'll turn that right back around and give it as a blessing to you. I believe when your word says every good gift has come from you, that I'll take every good gift and once again lay it right back at your feet. That's what it means here to trust. And here initially we see that with them, with this little boy's food. What's that look like for you today? What has God put in your life that needs to come back into the hands of Jesus? What blessing has he kind of driven your way just to see if you in return would lay it right back over to him? And will you trust him with everything that you have? Maybe it's your children or grandchildren. Maybe it's a situation your children or grandchildren are in. Will you trust that into his hands? Maybe it's your health or a job situation. Could be your finances or an opportunity that you desire. All right, will you trust all those things back into his hands, or are you just going to hang on to it yourself, thinking that you are the solution to the problem or the need that you have? Here Jesus was saying, just give it to me. Just give it to me. And so we see here, they give it. All right, they don't know what he's going to do, but they surrendered or they submitted to Jesus, exactly what he asked for. That's initially what it means to trust. Also, trusting here means to ask or to act with obedience in whatever Jesus is asking us to do. So the question is, how are we going to feed the people? The response was, make them sit down. Okay. I don't see how that really resolves their hunger issue, Jesus. You know, I don't see how that is going to take care of them. I mean, if they're going to sit down, it means they're going to stay here, Jesus. And you've seen what we've got in our hands, Jesus. There's not enough to even give everybody a bite here, Jesus. So what are we going to do? Sometimes the prodding in your spirit does not make sense. Sometimes the step of faith that you need to take, you would say that's just unreasonable. God's not asking me to do that. Did God really ask a dad of an only son to carry that only son up a hill to offer him as a sacrifice to God? Is that allegory? Is that good old Bible fiction? Or is there really a man who lived here 4,000 or 5,000 years ago named Abraham who literally walked his son up a hill and raised a knife to offer him as a sacrifice? You think God won't ask you to do something that's hard? We like when God asks us and directs us into easy things that make sense to us. Oh, I see. Jesus is going to feed everybody. No, Jesus is telling people to sit down, and I don't understand how that equals food. Sometimes what he asks is uncomfortable. Now, Miss Sarah Malone, she spoke here several times. You all know her well. Sarah says one of the ways she knows God is leading her is through that kind of unreasonable voice. That's the door she starts to walk through. Something prods her and she goes, that doesn't make sense. She says, all right, here we go. Because now here's an opportunity for God to be God. Oftentimes when I think I'm the solution, I'm playing the part of whom? I'm playing God. God, you know, I've got this one covered. It's in my hands. And so we don't factor him in. We let him go. Sometimes what God's going to ask you to do doesn't make sense. And you're not going to see how it's going to work out. And it may go against every gut emotion that you have. You may feel totally unprepared, incapable, unable of doing what's being asked of you. And yet what we know about God is that he never asks us to do something where there's no purpose. Right? It wasn't just random, hey, take your son up a hill on a Saturday and just offer him as a sacrifice. There was great purpose behind it. He was going to build the faith there in Abraham. He was going to demonstrate that it requires both bloodshed and faith for there to be salvation through the real sacrifice, whose name is Jesus. There's purpose behind it. Listen, by the way, that doesn't mean it always works out the way that we planned or hoped or desired. You know, sometimes we invest 1,000 and there's 10 that comes back. But there's a blessing within the soul that cannot be measured. Right? Sometimes there's a loss that we experience here on this planet, and we go, I would never want anybody to experience that, and yet somebody else does, and it gives you a chance to minister to that person. And we begin to see, okay, God, there was reason for my heartache and my suffering. It doesn't mean we get the loved one back. It just means we've now got an opportunity to serve and minister and demonstrate the love of God just as it was shown to us. Obedience is always the right answer. Even then, when that prodding in your spirit is like, I can't do that. I can't talk to that person because I don't know them. I can't share the gospel with my loved one because they'll go away. I can't separate from this group of people because we've been friends forever, even though there are bad influences on me. I can't invest all of this because then I just don't have much left to do what I want to do with in my life. Are we going to trust God? Are we going to act in obedience? Or are we going to try to be the answer again to our own problem? And so we see here, it's about just surrendering. We see about it's acting in obedience. Get the people to sit down, and that's exactly what the disciples did. They had all the people sit down. But then there's this thing of anticipation and expectation. Philip and the disciples never would have had anybody sit down if they weren't expecting Jesus to answer. I don't know how this works. It doesn't make sense to me. But he's going to show he's God here again. So I just wonder if this is starting to resonate in Philip. Okay, water to wine. I did drive out a few demons and healed a few people. Yeah, I remember that person that he healed today, so he's about to do something here that's God-like, that's not man-like. Maybe the light bulb is starting to come on for him. Maybe today that switch is maybe being flipped on for you one more time. That he's a God you can trust in, and therefore we need to be expecting with anticipation that he's a God who's always going to work, always going to move in ways that are, according to his plan, always ways that are best. And so if these things are true of God, then that should force me to live with that sort of anticipation. That should force me to expect God to be God and to stick around and wait and see what he's going to do. You know, for about 5 weeks now, we've been pronouncing something together at the end of our service. And to me, it ties in well today. Now to him who is able to do immeasurably more. Do you buy that? Do you believe that? Are you persuaded that that's the God that you know? Or have you created maybe God in a box who looks a little bit different than the way Paul says that he is there in Ephesians chapter 3? Can I really trust Jesus with whatever I'm facing? Can I really take a risky step, seems risky to me, into something unknown? Can I really act in a way expecting, anticipating God to come through here and to be God? I just wonder, do we fully trust what God is doing? Maybe you'd look at your life and go, I'm not real sure what God's doing. All right, do you trust that God is all-knowing? If you trust that God is all-knowing, that should be enough. I don't know how this works out, but I know that God is all-knowing, and that's enough. And that should settle over us. That's the comfort that comes from omniscience. Maybe today that comfort's trying to settle in on you. Maybe in your life there's a situation that just hasn't turned out the way you thought, or the direction of your life didn't go the way that maybe you had thought. Maybe you're trying to be the answer to your own problem. God never said we were all powerful, but God has demonstrated that he is. And so maybe today you just rest your situation into the hands of an all-powerful God. And then I just wonder, are we anticipating, expecting God to work? Are we expecting immeasurably more, or are we just settling for getting what we can do on our own effort? And so we walk into a building and go, today's going to go this way because this is what we have planned, rather than walking in and going, I wonder what God has in store today. I wonder what work he wants to do in our life. I wonder how today is a day of preparing for what he wants to do through us this week. Listen, if I have an immeasurably more problem, that's not a God problem, that's a me problem. So maybe today your prayer is just very simply, God, help me to trust you.